You're listening to Trek FM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we look forward to seeing you there.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
Hello and welcome to the 602 Club, TFM's local watering hole for all things outside of Star Trek. And I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and I'm really excited this week to have back a good friend of mine, Yancey Evans, who I just spent time with in person. Yancey, it was so great to actually see you and meet you for the first time in live action, as the kids like to say these days, in real life, IRL. But yeah, man, welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me, and it was awesome to have you come to my neck of the woods and for us to get the opportunity to see Revenge of the Sith on the big screen, which was awesome.
Man.
It was so good.
Awesome. I can't think really of a better way for us to have gotten to hang out than to spend time watching both of ours, like one of our absolute favorite Star Wars films together. It was just awesome.
It was amazing. It was awesome. And well, I ended up seeing it three times that weekend. It was great.
You're so lucky. I only had a chance to see it once, and that was with you, which, you know, at least that was fantastic. But because we were traveling, I didn't have a chance to get to the theater. And I was really sad, too. And this people, you're going to be bored. But I was never able to get to a theater that had any, like, the popcorn buckets or anything. And then, of course, everything was sold out so quickly. And so,
and then I had the malfunctioning Vader head that didn't come with a straw.
Yeah. Well, you know, the good thing about that is you can always stick another straw in there. So it's fine, you know. But I didn't get anything. So if anybody has an extra popcorn tin with that beautiful Matt Ferguson art on it, you want to send it to me, let me know. And of course, you can contact us all over social media under the name at the 602 Club on X Twitter. We're at the 602 Club TFM on Instagram. We'd love it if you would follow us and like us there and comment. We'd love to talk to you, so that would be great. You could also find us, of course, online on Facebook with the entire network at Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. We've got the entire network at trek.fm. Of course, you can find all of our podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. And if that podcast app of choice allows you to leave a star rating review, please do that, because it really does help people find the show. And if you like this show, tell your friends. Tell them, like, hey, you got to listen to the 602 Club. One of the best ways to grow a podcast is just by telling people that you like it and that they should check it out. So, well, Yancey, the last time you were here, we talked a little bit of Marvel. And we're actually going to be back in the Marvel Universe, because there's been so much that has been coming out from them recently. And so we are going to be discussing the Thunderbolts film with an asterisk. And first and foremost, I wanted to discuss this with you, because it's been a while since we had like this many Marvel films coming out at this point. So we just had Captain America Brave New World come out. And I wanted to ask you, though, where are we with the MCU? Because it feels like, you know, as you come into each one of these films, as at least it was in the first three phases, you knew exactly where you were. You knew where you stood with all the characters, and you knew what was happening and how it all fit in. But as we come into this film, especially one that involves a lot of disparate characters from TV shows and movies, and they're never the leads, but they're there. Where are we? And is that a little bit frustrating to you?
I think we're still trying to discover where we are. I think, to put it kindly, this film, in a lot of ways, this film kind of felt like a soft reset for the MCU in a way. It at least seemed like they were setting a course direction. you know, and all the other the previous phases, especially the first three phases, everything kind of seemed to be directed toward the Avengers and what the Avengers were going to do. And the lack of the Avengers has been this kind of gaping hole that I think they've been trying to fill at Disney with all this other product to see what sticks. Sure. And I think, and we'll get to it later, I think because of how the story concludes here, I think this is kind of a kind of course correction to kind of get a new direction, but I'm not sure this was necessarily the right direction per se. I don't even think Marvel at this juncture, I'm not even sure Kevin Feige knows exactly where Marvel is right now, necessarily. I think he's got some vague ideas, but it's like we're kind of grasping still. So,
You know, I think that's a good point. You know, when you think about all of the shows that they have come out, and in fact, even there was an article that we were both reading today where they were talking about this idea, you know, that with the advent of streaming, especially with Disney Plus, the whole idea was to get out content. And so they have had a quantity of content, but I think they've realized that they haven't had necessarily a quality of content. And so, yeah, I mean, especially think, and I'm just thinking back to like all of the shows that had come out, you know, previously, with, you know, you had WandaVision and Falcon Winter Soldier, Loki, What If, Hawkeye, Moon Knight, Miss Marvel, She-Hulk. And it's interesting to me, that a majority of those characters were not really doing much with, you know,
yeah.
And so when I come into this film and it's a movie that, you know, is going to have Bucky in it, and then we're going to have Wyatt in it from Falcon Winter Soldier, and then we're going to have Yelena, possibly maybe the new Black Widow, I don't know what we're calling her, and then we're going to have Ghost from Ant-Man and the Wasp, and Taskmaster. And then the Red Guardian from the Black Widow movie. I mean, just when you think about that, like, all of that is so fractured and discombobulated as a franchise and where it is, you know, and it's almost one of those things where you haven't helped the audience actually know what's important and what they should be paying attention to and what really matters. Because, you know, one of the things that Marvel had done in the first three phases that I think was so important was everything mattered.
Yeah.
Every film mattered. Everything was building towards something. And, you know, when I mentioned all those series that came out in phase four, well, a bunch of those series, a lot of them don't matter. Like Moon Knight or She-Hulk or, you know, even Miss Marvel, even though she was in the Marvels, it's like she's kind of fallen off Hawkeye. You know, it doesn't really matter. We haven't used Kate Bishop at all. And so there's so much about this where it just feels like they don't quite know what they're doing. And I think what you said, where you called this kind of a almost like a soft reboot where they're like, okay, we need to find a direction, and that direction basically needs to find a way to bring back a version of the Avengers or whatever. We need to get basically, it almost feels like we got to get back to the Avengers in some way, shape, or form. And, you know, so as we're kind of talking about where we are, do you think that's the right idea, that we need to get back to some semblance of this group of characters?
Yeah, I think one of the largest problems that Disney/Marvel is facing is that those first three phases were really, it's not just the Avengers, it's specifically, you know, Chris Evans is Captain America, Robert Downey Jr. is Iron Man, Chris Hemsworth as Thor. And those seem to be kind of like the core of the MCU. And right now, I don't know who the core of the MCU is. Is it Sam Wilson?
Yep.
Is it Sam Wilson? I don't know.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. We're still trying to... Is it Spider-Man? Well, why hasn't Spider-Man really been used since his last film? I would think he would be a natural.
Yeah.
I would think that would be a natural character to gravitate to, but we're not doing that apparently. And so instead, what we're doing is we're picking out, frankly, you know, as we were talking before we started, these are C and D list characters, and trying to make a compelling group out of them. And it kind of works on one level. On other levels, it's kind of I don't know, because it's a direction. I think we're still grasping. I think in a lot of ways, to be frank, we're holding out hope that the Fantastic Four is going to fix a lot, and then we'll move on to the new Avengers movies coming out.
Yeah, I mean, because the next big thing is Doomsday, which is basically and almost literally throwing everything in the kitchen sink at you. In some ways, it feels like, oh, remember Endgame, where like we brought everything and everyone together? Well, we're doing it again, but this time it's even more people, and even more people from like maybe the Fox universe will save us, because it did it for Deadpool.
And the problem with that is, like, to your point before, is everything before, you know, in the first three phases mattered. So even a simple little film like Ant-Man kind of mattered, because he was a character that appeared in Civil War, and it all, his story kind of was important to the overall crux of where things were going. We've got so many characters now from all these different shows. It's like, I don't know who I'm really supposed to care about at the end of the day.
And different universes.
Right. Exactly. So I think that's a large problem that, and then they seem to be going in a direction, and then the actor, like Elizabeth Olsen, seems to be like, she's out now.
Yeah.
And it's like, so obviously that was supposed to be a thing, and the rug got pulled out here. So
yeah,
it's just,
I mean, you would think that like Doctor Strange also would be a huge part of this version of the Avengers. And so it is very interesting. And in part of that, probably not the place to discuss it, but I would say the biggest issue that they made here was opening up the multiverse. And that gives you, Tony Gilroy was doing a fantastic interview about creating Andor. And he said, and George has talked about this, and many creators have talked about this, George Lucas, that is, limitations can actually make you better. And because Marvel just has no limitations anymore, because there's nothing boxing them in any way, shape, or form, and everything's open, when everything's open, it feels like almost nothing is open, because like we've talked about, you don't know really who to focus on. And so as we come into this and we basically have a Suicide Squad, you know, the story, this group is set out to take each other out because DeFontaine is trying to basically tie up all the loose ends on Ox, whatever this is. I didn't even remember this ever being a thing, but she's facing impeachment as the CIA director. And so first, I just got to ask you just about this plot point, because seriously, do you remember Ox being a thing anytime, anywhere in any Marvel thing that we've seen so far?
I think, well, she's been in a couple of the Marvel
productions.
I think she first appeared in the post credit scene for Black Widow, if I'm not mistaken.
So,
and then I think she was in
I think you're right. Yeah,
and then I think she was in. I mean, honestly, I can't remember. I think she might have been in Winter Soldier. Falcon and Winter Soldier.
I think you're right. Yeah, because she approached Wyatt at that point.
Yeah.
To yes. Yeah.
So there's been this loose kind of story out there that she's trying to recreate. She's trying to create superheroes now that the Avengers are gone. But it's
that
not,
she controls too.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's not she really is kind of like a Temu version of Amanda Waller.
Oh, phenomenal. Well done, sir. Well done.
She doesn't the problem in her character, and it happens throughout the film, is just when it's getting serious with her, it then becomes comedy. You know, it becomes a comedy bit.
Yes, yes.
Especially with her sidekick.
Marvel's assistant. Problem.
Yeah. So this kind of that's a larger problem with the film I have in general, is just like it's going places that I like, you know. And then it kind of pulls the rug out, and it kind of falls back into the standard tropes of being really jokey,
yeah.
Which kind of undercut what it's the messaging it's trying to get across,
yeah,
which is exactly. Pretty serious.
Yeah.
And I just think, again, it's just so many. Like, I know, you know, that article we were talking about. Iger was talking about he, and also Feige talks about he doesn't want people to have to do a bunch of homework. You know, for films, and like this film, you have to do a ton of homework. I mean,
yes,
there's Ant-Man and Wasp, there's Falcon and Winter Soldier, there's the Captain America movies if you want to get Bucky's backstory, then there's the Avengers movies, at least watch the core Avengers movies, then you got to watch Black Widow, and
Hawkeye, because Yelena plays into that show, yeah,
exactly. So there's just so much going on. I mean, honestly, I can't keep track of all of it at this juncture. So Ox may very well have been mentioned at some point in time, and I just may have lost track of it. I mean, and I watch all the Marvel, you know, all the Marvel products. So I don't know. But yeah, it's just a, I don't know what to say. Structurally, the film is it's well constructed in the sense that it's got a very defined beginning, middle, and end, and it goes from point A to point B.
Right.
Part of the problem with the first part of the film, though, is it's so occupied in this one location, you know, they're trying to get out of. Initially, they're, like you were saying, they're trying to go there to kill each other to hide evidence for her.
Mm-hmm.
And then you spend like the next 30, 40 minutes just trying to get out of this facility. That's a lot of screen time.
I mean, I think the whole point of the plot is just to bring them together. And I think one of the frustrating parts of the plot, honestly, is that DeFontaine and these characters in and of themselves, except for Yelena and Bucky, are so unimportant so far, really, to the crux of the MCU. I mean, come on. Wyatt is Dime Store Cap, a.k.a. U.S. Agent, which I don't even know if they ever say that name.
I don't think they say U.S. Agent in the film at all.
Which, you know... they literally kill Taskmaster within 3 seconds of the fight starting, so that makes her completely unneeded. And yeah, I think the interesting thing about this is that in many ways, the movie wants to do a lot of things. One, it wants to kind of set up this idea of, yes, we're going to spoil it. They're apparently the new Avengers, even though now it's almost like the split between Tony and Cap again, where there's going to be two different Avengers teams because, you know, Sam Wilson is suing for the rights to the name Avengers, which, oh, God, come on, guys.
How
petty and stupid can you get? Like, at this point, You're making me just not care about these characters because they're so asinine. And you're supposed to be heroes, not litigious jerks.
Yeah.
So I don't get that. And
Yeah, but the other thing the movie wants to do, right, is really this film wants to be kind of a meditation on this idea of pain and suffering and finding no serenity. And because, you know, our main villain is this character Bob, and he has the ability, and this is another thing about the movie that the plot doesn't do a great job, which is really kind of defining who he is and what his powers are. It does it so nebulously that it kind of almost leaves you feeling like, okay, anything the plot needs him to do, he can do, you know, instead of because, again, if you're not somebody who comes in with any comic knowledge, it is helpful to define a few parameters around your characters so that you have an understanding of that. You know, I think that's important for them to always remember that there are plenty of people who, like the MCU, that were not people who read the comics, and they really only follow the MCU through what you show us here, you know. Right. And so, but he has this ability, apparently, to be able to show people their worst moments, and in the same way as he kind of relives his worst moments. And in that, so there's this meditation about, especially for the character of Yelena, of somebody who has so many worst moments that she has chosen to do and also was in many ways forced to do as a Black Widow. And so how do you overcome this history of violence, this history of death, and all of these type of things? How do you overcome suffering is really the question of the movie. Incredible question, right? Like, that this movie really is a meditation on suffering. Either suffering brought on you by somebody else or the suffering that we cause ourselves and cause for others, which is incredibly fascinating. And what did you, and so this is the question I have for you in that, what did you have, how did you feel about what this movie's actual answer to that was?
Ooh, well, so let me address a couple of quick points. So Sentry, just for anybody who doesn't have a lot of comic knowledge, Sentry is this character, that's the good side of Bob. Who's almost like, so this character came out of this kind of trope that came from comics where they would always do these Superman type characters that always had a good side and a bad side. And the bad side is the character, the Void, which is where everybody's pain and suffering goes. But in the comics, he's more of like, he's his own arch nemesis kind of thing. And it's an internal struggle. He's battling it out over. Anyway, so that's beside the point. My problem, so it's a really interesting point, and it really has a lot of potential to be really profound. And you would think reading all the reviews that it really is profound, but it really isn't, because it everything. So the core problem with the story is that Yelena keeps going back to this line, and I can't even remember what the line is, but, you know, just kind of, it's like the bad stuff just happens and you just have to kind of suck it up and accept it. So it's very kind of internally focused. She, you know, at the beginning of the movie, you think she's committing suicide, but she's actually just doing a job because she says all these things about her life being, her job is terrible. She just doesn't feel any joy anymore, and you watch her jump off the building and you realize she's in the middle of a job. The problem with it is it's all so internally focused. It's very almost self-centered in a way, and the solution, so you know, and you and I both come from a faith background that requires us to be selfless and look externally And we talked about this a little offline, is that the irony is that the one character that's talking about all these things is the Red Guardian, you know, who's like, we need to be heroes. We need to go out and protect the innocent and help, you know. Yeah. Now, of course, there's a sales pitch to it, you know, because we could be on a Wheaties box kind of thing, which is, you know, that's kind of standard MCU jokey kind of stuff. But there's so much of this stuff that's so nihilistic. It really is. The messaging is just so like there are no real answers and you just have to accept it, you know, kind of thing, and just move on. And even though the answers, the irony is the solution to defeating the villain is external. It's coming together as a team and, you know, to quote from The Office, you know, hug it out. You know, bitch. You know, that's basically what they do at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
It's a very muddled, you know, there's things about like we don't even get Ghost's backstory. What's her deal? She's supposed to be like this substantial character. She's in the movie throughout the whole movie, pretty much. We don't get her story. Walker's story is really interesting, but he's treated like he's treated so poorly by the other characters that he becomes the butt of so many jokes
terribly
that his redemption story means nothing to a general audience, because once you've demeaned that character the way you have, any kind of hero's journey story where he comes and, you know, finds fulfillment or whatever, it's meaningless now because he's just turned into the butt of jokes. So I wanted to love this movie because there were a lot of things it could have done.
Yeah. Well, and it's just, and something on that, you know, I love that you bring up the idea that really this movie portrays perfectly the nihilistic void of life, and that. There are very few worldviews that can actually deal sufficiently with suffering and have answers for it. And because for her, you know, her quote is, you know, there's something wrong with me, an emptiness. And I thought it started when my sister died, but now it just feels like something bigger, a void. You know, Bucky tells them, you know, I've been where you are and the past doesn't go away. You can either live with it forever or you can do something about it. So, and then the other answer to this is this idea that we need others to be able to see the best in ourselves so that we can see the best in ourselves and we can truly overcome. But in that way, all of this, like you said, is not only so self-focused, but you have to be your own hero and savior. Like, you have to be able to be the one who really truly pulls you out of it. Yes, other people can come around you and hug you and tell you you're great or whatever, but somebody else telling you you're great doesn't change the way you actually feel about yourself, especially if you are somebody like a Bucky or like a Yelena or any of these other characters where they have done terrible things, right? You can't paper over that with somebody's flowery words about you because you know they're BS. And so there's this true longing here for a way to find redemption out of this void that you find yourself in, where everything feels meaningless and hopeless because you know you can't save yourself. And it really just, I don't want to get too spiritual for those who aren't that way, but, you know, C.S. Lewis said it best, I think, when he said, you know, if I find in myself desires for nothing that this world can satisfy, the only logical explanation is that I was made for another world. And that's the answer to their problem. That's the answer, is that they have a longing and a desire to be made whole. They can't do it themselves, and nobody hugging you is going to make this better,
right?
And so in the end, truly, I think one of the highlights of this film, and the thing that made it incredibly sad for me, is that there will never be any serenity for any of these characters, because truly the answer is nihilism. There is no hope. There really is no answer. Yelena even says that to Bob, you know, even when they're at the end, she's like, you just kind of got to get through it. You got to get over it. And it's like, okay, but what happens if you can't?
Yeah. And the interesting thing is, like, at the beginning, she's, you know, she's talking about how her job just totally sucks. And I'm like, well, welcome to most people's worlds. Like, you know, yeah. Most people are not finding their personal self-satisfaction
yeah.
in their job. Now, some people are lucky and they have that kind of job that they've always wanted and desired and really fulfills them personally. And they feel like they're doing something important. But yeah. most people just have regular 9-to-5 jobs now. Yeah. But so that means that's not your focus. You know, that's not the end of your road. You know, this 9-to-5 job at this, you know, wherever you're working at. It's things externally. It's things, and it's not necessarily, you know, validation from others that makes you happy. It's finding your purpose. The film kind of gets there with the whole New Avengers thing. It kind of gets there, but it doesn't really. I never felt completely satisfied with it because right. it's still, again, portrayed as a joke. You know, yeah. it's not.
Well, and they're named the New Avengers by a character who I don't understand why isn't arrested at the end.
Right.
Why in the world is Val able to not just be arrested for what she's done? I mean, she's, one, been experimenting on human beings to try and create the ultimate weapon that she can control. She almost destroyed the world with Void. And yet for some reason where she's just going to walk free like Wanda yeah. in WandaVision because, you know, you'll never know how much she's, you know, suffered. Well, you know, Val is a character who literally believes that might makes right. Like she even says it. She says righteousness without power is just an opinion.
Opinion.
Which is also an interesting, thought process we never actually deal with in the film. But I don't understand why she just walks scot-free.
So the funny thing is, this is probably one of my biggest beefs of the film, is that the end just feels so tacked on. Like this was just added at the last minute, the whole New Avengers thing. It just feels like, you know, because they're walking up to her, they're all ticked off. And then she walks behind, you know, this tarp. And then you get the reveal, and on the other side, there's a big press conference, and all of a sudden, they're announced as the New Avengers.
Yeah, everything's
fine. And I'm
like,
fine. Well, wait a minute. What? I'm like, well, hold on one second. Okay, now you did manage to destroy all the evidence from the tower other than, you know, Void and Sentry, you know, Bob. But you literally revealed to the world that you've been doing this the entire time. Your whole plan's been exposed. So you should still get kicked out of the CIA, right?
Only reason she isn't is because now they own her.
Yeah.
And so it's like, again, there is this absolute kind of nihilistic, self-focused selfishness, which is, we can use you now. And right. It's like, you're supposed to be the heroes?
Yeah, the cycle never got broken. It's the same cycle now. It's just, yeah, it is.
It's just reversed.
Yeah, it's just reversed.
And so that's the thing that really bothers me about this film, is that everything they're trying to do thematically, they completely undercut with really terrible decisions. And what's fascinating to me about this is that they can't see it. Because they think that they have given us good answers, right? Which should terrify us that the answer is, oh no, as long as we're in power, that's all that matters. Because, yeah. You know, we're right.
Yeah, exactly.
In the end, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, since Steve Rogers has left, has basically just become this nihilistic might makes right power struggle. And there is no character that has any kind of like moral authority at all whatsoever. You know, Sam tries to have that in some ways, and I think maybe is the closest possibly to having that, and yet, you know, nobody cared about the Brave New World, and so it's just like, it's really frustrating to me because in the end, it's a reflection of where we are in culture, which is also terrifyingly sad to me. But it's also just, I think, just for the universe in general, it's really suffering because it's not willing to allow there to be a right or wrong. There's all this moral gray area that we all just kind of sift around in, and it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, losing Steve Rogers, I can't. It really did hurt the brand to such an extent because there is no moral center to this brand right now.
Exactly.
It's all just kind of whatever, you know, whoever happens to hold the most, you know, the best hand at the time is.
Yeah, it's a great point.
That's the one in charge. Like, you know, there's a lot about this movie I really like. You know, I don't want to sound like I'm just pooping on the film. I think structurally it's a well-made film. There's a lot of good action set pieces. Some of the characters are really interesting. I just think, you know, there's just so many misses though. Like I keep going back to Walker. As a veteran, I just found his portrayal offensive. I mean, he's like he's like a bad parody of an army vet who got out, you know, during Afghanistan.
Yeah.
It's like we're reliving the kind of 70s trope that every Vietnam vet was a bomb waiting to go off. And I just didn't like that. And his story could make really compelling, interesting stuff. Because clearly in Falcon Winter Soldier, it's established he has PTSD bad. And it's kind of addressed, but not really addressed. But we never go there with this movie. We only hint that he's looking at a phone and he's really upset that people don't like him. And he's so upset that he's neglecting his kid. And then we find out that his wife leaves him. And it's like, you could have done so much with that storyline and you just chose not to do anything with it and given him an actual redemption arc other than, you know, holding up a concrete wall kind of thing. But I mean, even at the end, he's a joke. He's holding his same taco shield, you know, the shield it refers to as a taco now because it's been bent. It's like,
it's terrible.
Is this terrible? It's just,
yeah. I think you've said that really well, is that we really have kind of come to this point where I'll give the, you know, a place that I'll compliment the movie because I actually think that they did a great job is that this movie, aside from a lot of the other films that we've had in the MCU, this movie actually looked good.
Yeah.
And I think that you were also right that this movie, they did a great job of kind of like it's very cohesive. I think it's coherent in that sense. It's structured well. There's not a lot of like feeling like there's excess to the movie, which is fantastic. And yet the movie, it still leaves me in a place that is just incredibly frustrated. And I think it continues to be a problem that we have just in general with Marvel, which,
I told my daughter, let me bring this point home. I told my daughter this. I said, one of the biggest complaints that I think she and I have had with not just Marvel, but Star Wars, and I think we've all expressed these kind of concerns, is that a lot of these Marvel and Star Wars shows on Disney Plus really feel like they should have been movies and they were just kind of padded out to make 4 or 5 hours of TV content. Whereas this movie actually feels like it probably should have been a television show because it really would have given you room to explore some of the more personal stories. Like you could have gone a little more into Walker's story. You could have gone into Ghost's story, you know, and fleshed these things out. And especially that whole ending being so kind of this inside somebody's head it really feels like kind of a TV trope, you know, that you see like in the old, you know, original series episode, The Empath, where it's all in that, like, you know, it's just all kind of more of a artistic kind of interpretation of somebody's brain and all the different rooms inside your brain where you go and think about things. And that kind of feels more TV than film. But man, it's a really good looking show, though. It really does look good. It's got a great score. I love the score for the film. Just there's so many. There's a lot of really good here. It's just the thematically, it's just where it fell through the cracks for me.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I've got to ask you just we talked a little bit about it, but so we have, of course, the end credit sequences with the mid credits and then the end credits. So what it the mid credits is where we get the whole idea that there's this split between Sam and Bucky, and that there's going to be this split between the new Avengers and the Avengers. And so how did you feel about the way that played out in that mid credit sequence?
Are we talking about the one with the Wheaties box?
You know, that's part of that one too.
I'll be honest. I love Red Guardian. I just think he's like, he kind of holds the film together for me. He's very funny and he does have some profound things to say. So I love the fact that in the end he got his wish, you know, he got to be on the Wheaties box. I thought that was a cute little, but the whole naming rights thing, oh my gosh, that is so corporate. It is so just like, is this what we're devolving the Avengers into? Are we going to have a courtroom drama scene where we have, you know, maybe we can get Daredevil to come and represent one of the parties and She-Hulk can represent the other party and we could have another court scene with the Avengers versus the new Avengers.
Because what we need is more Daredevil in this universe. After that season,
I just didn't like it because it just kind of undermined it just kind of undermined the whole vibe of the film. It just like, wait, you established them as the new Avengers and now there's another party. Wait, what? Yeah. Why wouldn't you just invite Sam on the team? Why wouldn't he just lead the team? I don't understand that.
The whole thing is just fake drama. Yeah, I agree. I don't really have anything to add. I think you said it so well. It just is, it seems silly. The end credits though, has the reveal that the Fantastic Four are from another dimension and are landing now in our dimension, ruining anything about the Fantastic Four to matter. Why? Because why would you care about that universe if you know they're just coming to ours?
Yeah, that was... you could have done that in such a roundabout way that only the comic geeks would have gotten it. You really could have. There was a way to do it. You know, they used to do that in the first three phases. A lot of times there would be things that you'd see in a post-credit signal, like, that doesn't make any sense. But if you kind of were inside baseball, you know, as it were, in terms of comics, hold on. Does that mean, you know, and the problem is this was just so in your face. You know, it's obviously the ship from the trailer that we just saw attached to this movie. So, and it says FF4 right on the side. And the theme, I think the Fantastic Four theme even plays when they come out, that little flourish that Michael Giacchino wrote. I don't know why you would make such a major reveal, because it obviously tells you what's going to happen at the end of Fantastic Four, that they're going to get sucked into our world, you know, or the current, you know, timeline, or they have to make a choice to go to the current timeline to fix whatever they couldn't fix in the other movie. So I just don't know why they did that. I don't know. I don't have an answer for that.
It really, it truly is to me astounding that you would give, because I mean, obviously I think every single one of us as fans has had the question of how does this fit into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, right? Because you know, for all intents and purposes, Steve is the first Avenger. So, even though, doesn't that get retconned in something that somebody else was really the first Avenger? Was Miss Marvel was the first person on?
Yeah, I think so. Anyway, I don't remember.
Whatever. But yes. So I think that, and in some ways, I almost just really hope that that's not the case. But it does feel like they've already given away a big point of that film. And it just doesn't make sense to me as to why you would do that. And I think that this kind of comes down to, you know, when you just mentioned the things in the first three phases of the MCU, they were so good about planting all of these little nuggets, right? And like you said, you had to be really inside baseball to get some of them. But then as you went forward, it made sense. And, you know, this one, I feel like it actually would have been better for them to not have a Fantastic Four teaser. It would have been better to do something for Doomsday. And because then you're not just playing on the very next film that's coming out. So I don't know. It just, I guess I am really interested to see where you're going to kind of and what you're going to rate Thunderbolts asterisk or the new Avengers asterisk. Since, wait, before we even talk about that, so they came out the other day and they've already changed the name. Well, they've changed the name, quote unquote, to the new Avengers.
In fact,
after the movie came out. So yeah, like, so if you haven't seen the movie, it's all spoiled.
Yeah, so when I went to the theater yesterday to watch the film, it already had the new poster up. They replaced the Thunderbolts poster with the new Avengers poster. So, yeah, if you didn't know anything about it going in blind, that joke's on you.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I just don't.
I don't understand either. It makes no sense to me that
it makes no sense.
You would kind of give away.
I get it, like weeks down the road when it's still in theaters, that's fine, you know, because everybody is going to know by then. But
yeah, at that point, everybody has seen it.
So. Right. You just had opening weekend. This is the first, you know, full week of release. I don't know. And it might even be something you could use as a marketing ploy to get people to come back again, you know, saying, hey, it's actually the new Avengers. Did you know that?
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't know.
So where would you, go in your ratings, you think?
So when I came out of the theater, I said, okay, so my bar, as you know, based especially on the last film, my bar is incredibly low now for Marvel. I had rated it when I came out of the theater. I thought, oh, this is a 3.5 out of 5. But the problem is I started reflecting on it the next day. I took some notes and I started thinking about it, and the more I thought about it, the thematic elements of the film just really grinded my gears. So I moved it down to a 3, but I'm going to split the difference because I do think it's a well-constructed film. If you're looking for a good piece of entertainment, you know, it's fine. I would probably say go to a matinee, you know, save a few bucks. So I give it like a 3.25 star. That's 3.25 out of 5. I'm going to split the difference.
Nice. Nice. that's really interesting. I think, you know, as you were mentioning, the fact that you started thinking about the film and the more you thought about it, you know, the kind of the issues kind of rose to the surface as if, you know, you're trying to refine gold and all the dross was at the top. And so that's really been my experience with this film. You know, I came home and my wife didn't go with me to see it, which because she was like, I don't really care, and which says something. And I told her, I was like, it's fine. It's like aggressively fine as a movie. And that's the problem. It's like only half a good movie. And the reason it's only half a good movie is because, yes, it's, I think it's a well-constructed film. It looks good. I think all of that stuff works. The action is fine. You know, the performances are fine. You know, I think actually, you know, Florence Pugh does a pretty good job in the movie for the most part. You know, there's some good performances in that way. I've heard some people really raving about Florence Pugh, but I don't think she's like Oppenheimer good here. She's just like,
she's really good.
Yeah,
she's good. The performances all around are really are actually very good. The guy who played Sentry / the Void was exceptional, I thought. Pullman, I don't remember his first name. He's really good.
Lewis Pullman.
Lewis Pullman.
And in fact, is he related to Bill Pullman? Because he really looks a lot. Yes, he is the son of Bill Pullman.
Oh, well, there you go.
He looks just like his dad. So, yeah. That's fantastic. Yeah,
for me, performance-wise, the standout for me, I think, was David Harbour, because he really managed comedy as well as drama. The scene with him and Yelena when he's telling her how much she means to him, that's a great scene. And that's what this movie needed more of, is that.
Yes. So in that, performances are good. So half of the movie is good in that sense. The other half of the movie, when it comes down to just kind of the plot and the actual like thematic elements and how they don't really come together the way that they want them to, they're not really saying what they want them to. They're actually saying the opposite. I give this 2.5 out of 5 stars. So it's honestly a film. People need to go to the movies and support films, but if you're trying to save money, just wait till Disney Plus, because this really truly feels honestly like a Disney Plus film more than it does and in all honesty, both of these movies have felt like this. At least this movie looked better on the big screen than Brave New World. But this movie just kind of leaves me cold. And you know, with Fantastic Four coming out, it's like I'm at an all legit, and I do mean legit, all-time low at my care for Marvel. And the fact that I haven't finished the Daredevil series should also let people know something. I mean, it's just like you guys have no gas right now. I think Marvel could actually be in trouble. I think, too, just the box office for this is actually not great anyway. They're not doing, you know, gangbusters Marvel box office, that they normally do. And so I think they have a lot of ground to make up. You know, I think the fact that Doomsday comes out next, I think, after this, you know, when you're throwing all that in the kitchen sink out as, I think people will probably go to that film just like they did for Daredevil, just like they did for Deadpool Wolverine. And it's just because I'm going to get to see all these people. And so I don't even know if that's
It seems like Marvel's at a point where unless there's like a stunt involved in your movie or show, people have kind of largely checked out, you know, Spider-Man, you got to see all 3 Spider-Men on the big screen, it was a huge success. Granted, that was a great movie, but
it absolutely was. And I think you're absolutely right that we're in this place with Marvel where we're truly and utterly just trading on nostalgia and nostalgia that we've built. And that's going to run out sooner rather than later. And I think that's actually kind of the place that we are, where once you get past something like Doomsday, it's like, okay, well, like we played that card. We don't have it anymore. So, all right.
Anyway. Well, I'm still holding that hope for Fantastic Four because it was one of my favorite comics in my youth. So
I'll be praying for you. Yancy, if people wanted to catch up with you, maybe talk more Marvel or see what else you've got going on, Where is the best place to do that?
So on X, formerly Twitter, my handle is Galandro1. It's an old Star Wars reference to the Brian Daley novels. You can find me on Facebook at Yancey Evans. Really hard to find me. It's not a super common name. I do have a blog I'm eventually going to pull out of mothballs called onesaga.wordpress.com about all things Star Wars. So I will be blogging here shortly. Those are my main places to reach me at.
Well, you can find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. So if I'm on that platform, that's my name. Of course, here on the network outside the 602 Club, lots of great Star Trek talk with Chris Jones. So please check out all those shows like Warp 5 or The Orb or To the Journey. And so great stuff. And of course, you know, we have Saddle Up should be coming back soon. It's sometime this summer. The Strange New World Season 3 is supposed to come out. So we'll see if that happens, and when that happens, we'll be back for that show. And of course, you can find me over on the Nerd Party Network with a couple of shows. One is about Harry Potter. Talked about every single chapter of that series, one chapter at a time. And then, of course, aggressive negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars each and every week. But thank you so much for joining us. And y'all come back now, you hear? Thank you.